Hello and welcome to the China Business Brief, a podcast from the China Business Business Council, where we explain the latest news relevant to anyone working in or with the world's second largest economy. I'm Joe Cash, and for this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Alicia Garcia Herrero, Chief Economist for the Asia Pacific within Natixis, who's going to talk us through the question economists, business people, and policymakers the world over are currently asking. What exactly is going on with the Chinese economy? Alicia, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us again.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And I suppose there only is one place to start, really. Just how much trouble is China's economy in? It's the lead for this week's The Economist, which clearly suggests that things aren't great. And how much of that is a result of the zero COVID strategy? Or are other factors such as last year's lingering real estate issues and global supply challenges making themselves felt as well?
Thanks for the query. It's kind of a $1 million question. It so happens that by now, many of us will get the $1 million because we've been saying loud and clear. I still remember an op-ed I wrote, which took me a while to publish because it started by saying, no matter how, you know, dramatic the war in Ukraine this early April looks like, as far as the economy is concerned, China COVID policies are so much worse, are a much bigger shock for the global economy. And, you know, I remember trying to publish this in the French media, and it's like, wait a minute, you can't say that, you know? We are here very worried about the Ukraine war. I said, I understand. I'm just taking the economic perspective here. And I'm going to make that point loud and clear. China's COVID policies are the largest shock for the global economy today. I know the podium is kind of, you know, crowded. We have Ukraine, we have the Fed tightening. So, you know, it's hard to place one, two, three. But I think the first place is for China's COVID policies because the economy is plummeting and we're not yet fully aware of what that means for the global economy because so many other things are happening at the same time that it's hard to disentangle. And as we move on, I think there's an increasing understanding of what this means for commodity prices. That's the only positive. For commodity prices might be, you know, like smoothing the cycle, which is of course very strong. So that's a positive, but you know, anybody who depends on Chinese imports will suffer. Anybody who, you know, any big company, we heard Apple, yeah? I mean, which depends heavily on the Chinese market will suffer. Anybody who bet, yeah, this is investors, yeah, I mean, portfolio investors who bet on the Chinese bond market is suffering already because, and this is mostly because of the US, because, you know, the yield differential between the US and China has turned negative. And on top of that, if they sell now, the renminbi is so much cheaper, you know, by converting that back into whatever currency, they'll have a loss beyond the fact that, you know, prices haven't moved in the direction that would have made that investment appealing anymore. So, you know, equity, you know, it's like anybody having to deal, as you said, quite rightly at the beginning with China, I would say even importing from China, which is interesting. Yeah. If you import from China, you say, okay, wait a minute, I'm safe because I'm dealing with China for what China needs to do the most now because the economy is plummeting. They need to export. So I'm fine. I may even negotiate some, you know, like discounts or, well, try it. You won't manage because of the supply chain disruptions. Actually, there is an increasing, we wrote a piece on this, it's quite amazing. There is an increasing markup for China because of the restrictions, the actual goods available are fewer. So, you know, in a way that the world still needs this demand. So there's no space, basically. It's not an overcapacity story 2016 or 15. It's a supply disruption story that means that China is contributing with additional inflation to what is already a very inflationary global environment. So I need to think of a positive, and I hope I will during this podcast. But I'm just saying, my God, all of the shocks go in the same direction. You know, it's just very, very disturbing to see that.
Well, perhaps you can't answer the million-dollar question today, which would be a shame to our listeners. But let's take this question from a different perspective. You're now attending one of the meetings that Premier Li Keqiang has been supposedly having with Chinese policymakers, business people, to try and ascertain which levers the government can pull, knowing that, of course, the zero COVID lever that's going to stay very resolutely still. Do you think the Chinese government does have any significant levers that it can pull over the next 6 months if it is to resurrect the economy and hit the targets it's set for the year? I know that President Xi has talked a lot about boosting infrastructure spending. Premier Li has, you know, plans to try to boost flights and to try and reattract foreign investors. But what levers are realistically available to them?
Well, what you just said reminds me of how we economies operate. I mean, we maximize something given certain constraints. Now, when the constraints are massive, i.e. dynamic zero COVID policies, it's hard to maximize, okay? That's in essence what I'm trying to say. So what you do is you increase your inputs. What are the inputs? Okay, what can China do well? I mean, how has China managed in the past? And you go and rethink that thing, because you know, you probably don't want to explore new issues now. You know, you are in the midst of a crisis, let's face it. So you need to, in a way, use what you know how to do. And plus there is, you know, Party Congress in November. So you need to do what you know how to do well and hope it works. So that's exactly what China did. Infrastructure, I think it was 4.2 trillion. I mean, it's a massive amount of money. Of course, somebody thought, wait a minute, who is going to build? Because, you know, we are in zero COVID. There's no mobility or restricted mobility. It's going to be enormously expensive to do this with closed loops. I mean, who's going to build? Yeah, I mean, so there we go. Infra alone can't do it. So let's come up, and this was the PBOC first with, I think it was 22 measures, if I remember, and then they became 33 recently. And you see things there like subsidies for auto purchases, which I understand because the latest data was minus 30 growth. And as you know, in Shanghai, zero units sold. Now, try in Shanghai to tell people, I'm going to give you a subsidy. I mean, they're going to look at you and say, sorry, that's not what I need at the moment. I need, you know, basic consumption because I'm locked. And nobody's going to use those subsidies. If you see, or if anything, they try their best to use them in a way that goes to precautionary savings, but not to consumption, because nobody wants to consume. But this is not China. This is well proven in the US, in Europe. I mean, in the midst of the lockdowns, no matter how much liquidity there was there, nobody was consuming. So, okay, so these subsidies are going nowhere. Then the local governments, interestingly, they were told, we need you, you know, spend. Well, they're spending big time because they need to pay, as you know, for all of this mass testing, which is a humongous part of the local government expenditure. It's not very productive. Maybe to control COVID, but I'm saying in terms of growth, I mean, can somebody explain me how mass tests help growth? Maybe these employees?
I was going to ask you that exact question after we'd finished recording, actually.
Yeah, maybe it reduces unemployment by 0.0.0. Whatever. But, you know, it's not going to be sustainable, is it? Because it's not producing anything that you can put in the GDP. And so, and that's not only that, local governments are starting to say, this was basically the point to Li Keqiang in the Q&A, who's paying for this mass test? Because, you know, I'm running out of cash. Can I issue additional local government, special purpose local government bonds? No, you can't. Li Keqiang said, why? Because the fiscal deficit is ballooning. So, you know, rightly so, he's very worried about the future. He doesn't want, you know, local governments to just, you know, cash in and grow out of cash, basically. So he's hoping that this 100,000 people think their way through to grow without additional spending, which is quite something. And, you know, I'm sure there's, so what that means is keep jobs, maybe pay less, but keep, you know, like keep social stability. Don't fire people. We heard that before. Banks already asked to lend to Evergreen so that SMEs do not collapse. But, you know, this is not like a, sorry to say, like, but a very structured plan. That's the key here. And I think the government, I mean, Li Keqiang clearly understands this. Yeah, youth unemployment in China is 18.8%. It's not low. Not even for European standards, maybe except Spain, I have to say. But, you know, I also think that the gray economy in Spain probably bigger, you know, like in the sense that I doubt that the savings, you know, no matter how big the savings, they're very poorly distributed in China. So there's going to be a part of the Chinese households that are going to suffer big time, and there is no welfare state for them to be protected, no unemployment. The pension system, as you know, is very partial. I mean, there's a lot of things that, a lot of parts of the population that are going to be really shattered by this situation. And subsidizing auto sales will not make it. Infrastructure with lockdowns will not make it. So they need to figure how to protect those that are going to suffer so that they, you know, avoid, to be frank, social unrest, or, you know, in Chinese terms, lack of harmony. Okay, let's put it this way. But, you know, that's where we are now.
And not to put a downer on things and make this podcast really depressing for anybody in China or working with it, but placing China now in a global context, surely that those issues are going to become worse. If you look at what followed in the US and in the EU after lockdowns were lifted and they did try to live with the virus or whatever other terminology you want to use, there was massive consumer price inflation. Is that coming its way to China? And, you know, the unemployed, those that have been laid off from work and are struggling, are they going to find it even harder to, you know, acquire and consume?
Yeah, it's a very good point. I think there are two scenarios. Neither of them are, sorry, I know this is a very gloomy podcast. I'm trying my best to end on a positive note. But, you know, it's hard, okay? I mean, and it's hard also for the rest of the world, because we are now, as you said, in the midst of those unintended consequences. So, you know, we're not fully out. I mean, this is a process, yeah? I mean, it's just that for China, the kind of early stage, let's call it this way, meaning lockdown, accept the virus, acceptance is longer for obvious reasons. But, you know, that doesn't mean the second stage is not going to hit China, which is your point. So when I say there are two scenarios, what I mean to say is that it depends on your time frame. I think that's where we will be heading. But of course, if because we got into the inflation mode, even in Latin America. In Latin America, the fiscal and because many people say in the US and Europe, or the UK for that matter, we got into inflation because we expanded fiscal and monetary policy enormously. Sorry, no, because Latin America is in big trouble. Yeah, inflation in Brazil is like double digit, but getting closer to 20%. I mean, it's like unheard of. I mean, unfortunately, heard of for Brazil, but, you know, for times that you don't want to remember. So even for countries, this is the point, emerging economies where the fiscal and monetary stimuli were not so big, inflation is coming. And the reason is that the economy stops working properly. You know what I mean? Like the greasing of the economy, the supply and the demand, these disruptions, and also global disruptions, because Brazil imports a lot of consumer goods from China and elsewhere. But, you know, China is the largest trading partner for Brazil. And China has disruptions. Yeah, I mean, logistical disruptions. As I said, these markup prices, you can see that export prices in China are literally four times CPI prices. Just like, you know, what I'm trying to say here is that that's where the inflation is heading. Now, can the inflation remain in China, which is your question? To me, this is basically, in 2022-23, if we continue with repressed consumption because of partial lockdowns and no, because, you know, people will not consume. If, however, the stimulus becomes massive because they just want growth at, you know, no matter what, at any, you know, like even with restrictions, maybe, because that will create so many distortions that there may be, you know, key items that will become scarce, including food, and they are important for the CPI basket in China. So you may even get this crazy situation where you are in semi-lockdowns and you're getting, it depends on how strong the stimulus, how much money is put there. I'm tempted to think that the first scenario is more likely, that China does not reach the target, that China can't or doesn't really want to throw, you know, through the window in terms of fiscal expenditure. Thus, I think an immediate burst in inflation is unlikely. But of course, over time, surely, but it's just not possibly as immediately as in the rest of the world.
Well, Alicia, thanks for coming on the podcast again. And to our listeners, I'm sorry that we didn't have any better news, but can't sugarcoat this. The economy is probably going to continue to struggle into 2023. But Alicia, it's been great speaking to you. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Have a great, to the extent possible, have a great weekend.
I hope so. I mean, I'm getting great value for money out of my apartment. So it's a lovely place to be. And if you're listening in the UK, do have a good weekend, go outside, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode of the China Business Group. Goodbye. China Business Brief is a podcast brought to you by the China Britain Business Council. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you're subscribed. To find out more about our other events and activities, do check out our website at www.cbbc.org.